Hi, welcome
Okay.
everyone. I'm Rachelia, and I'm really grateful for this opportunity to have Rabbi Kaganoff, an expert in halacha and sexuality, with us now. Thank you so much for taking time from your busy schedule to help us, give us perspective, and answer the questions and concerns that are familiar to us. And with that, I hand it over to Rabbi Kaganoff.
Thank you very much. So, first, before we start, I just want to say we should all be zocha to the session. We should be zocha to come away with an understanding and a clarity of halacha and hashkafa in a proper way, and that Hashem should help us understand properly. Me too. I will be speaking in English. I may lapse back into some, you know, Jewish jargon, halachic jargon. If I do so, I'm going to ask the moderator to jump in and allow me to remind me to go back to the English, because I want to make sure that everyone understands what we're saying. And certainly, if something is not understood, then please ask questions for sure. Okay, so the order in which I'd like to address this is the order of the questions as I received them. I did not have a chance to sort everything out, but I will make some preliminary remarks as an introduction, and then we'll go to the questions directly. Okay, the topic that was supposed to be discussed today is called masturbation. Now, I want to make sure we understand clearly what we're talking about. We're talking about stimulating oneself sexually, either beginning or becoming to full orgasm, but that's masturbation. Oftentimes when people ask me, Shilas, I hear, I masturbated my husband, or I masturbated, etc., the other way around. That's an incorrect use of the verb. If I stimulate someone else to use my hand, that's a different issue. It's not about masturbating. I'd say it's a halakh issue. I said it's a different topic, a different concept. Not this. We're talking about masturbating, which means stimulating oneself sexually by usually hand manipulation of the sensitive areas and coming to orgasm. Yes, no, may not have to come to that degree, but even less so, but enjoying the sexual pleasure of manipulating the for oneself. Okay, that's what we call it. That's masturbation. Now, for a man, masturbation ends up with two issues. One is the actual arousal that's caused by masturbating, and then there's the ejaculation, which means the hoserazem, in which case it would probably be levat tfola. Okay, those are the two issues that have to be addressed. Okay, but Moshe Feinstein paskins that even without hoserazem levat tfola, masturbation is an issa d'oraisa. Okay, he is alone in his opinion. All the other earlier rishonim, the achronim, the poskim, including even today, except those who follow Moshe's psak, everyone disagrees with him. They hold that the masturbation itself, without ejaculation, you know, the sexual stimulation itself, without ejaculation, is not usher. Okay, it is only usher if it brings to ejaculation, which of course then only applies to men. It does not apply to women. Okay, so you will hear many rabbonim who are just not aware. Many rabbanim just know the psak from Moshe because Moshe writes it numerous times in his Sefer Igros Moshe. He to put his posit, he gives his opinion, and he demonstrates that he is correct from a Gemara. However, and that many rabbanim know, and therefore they will tell a woman straight out, or you will hear, right, that a woman is also not allowed to masturbate because it has nothing to do with Hotzah Zera, just ejaculation. However, the vast majority of real poskim who know that Moshe is a shitas yachid, it's an individual singular opinion, we don't pass like that, in which case masturbation for a woman would be permitted. Now, so let's go to the questions. I think with that as an introduction, let's then go to the questions as they came to. So I'm going to be dealing with questions one at a time. I will read the question and then I will respond to it. And there will be redundancy. We'll be repeating it because the questions sometimes are repetitive, but the Chazara will be okay, I think. Okay, it's okay for everyone to hear it more than once. So the first question, I would like Rabbi Kagan to address this if possible. Is there an acceptable place for masturbation in a healthy marriage? Okay, so the answer to that question is no. If it's really a healthy marriage, then the sexual satisfaction should be taking place between husband and wife. All right, that the husband should be satisfying her sexual needs, and she would be satisfying his sexual needs, right? So and it's consensual, and they're all very happily married and wonderful, so then there should be no reason for self-stimulation. It shouldn't be necessary, right? It would be like considered overeating. What do I need it for? Okay. The reason why this has become such an issue in today's day and age is twofold. One is because our marriages are not necessarily healthy, and two, there's also all the outside stimulations, which we'll discuss later in the other questions, is that our society, as much as we'd like to be able to insulate ourselves and keep ourselves, you know, away from the technology that surrounds us, it is well nigh impossible to do so. It infiltrates, it gets in, and then once it steps in, so then of course it lures us, and we become acquainted with these type of ideas, and therefore sometimes even in a healthy marriage, right? So things are sought out after which are really not really necessary, right? You don't have to have, you know, five desserts at a meal. One dessert is enough. But if you serve Viennese tables at the end of a chasna, so then I need five desserts, not one. Okay, so it follows that line of thinking. Okay, number two. If someone is acting out in either of two ways, just masturbating, maybe with some thoughts, or looking up erotica online, which then leads to masturbation, is one of them better? Oh, definitely. To look at erotica online is usur. It's a Torah prohibition. It's an issur d'oraisa. Saying Kriya Shema in the third parsha, which, by the way, women are not obligated to say, but that's a separate topic we'll deal with. But the pasuk is well known. So the last two parts, asher atem zonim achareihem, is nus, and eneihem is to look. Those are two different things. So for one to watch erotica, you know, if one notices erotica by accident, that you're not responsible for. Like other things, you walk by, something by accident, one transgresses something on Shabbos or in Kashrus. You didn't intend to, it happened. But we're talking about to intentionally look at pornography, right, is a Torah prohibition, right? It's not supposed to be done. And therefore, to masturbate by use of erotica would be awesome. The erotica would be awesome. The masturbating itself would not be. Okay, and we'll see there's a question later about how does that play itself out. Okay, number three. I asked a well-known Orthodox woman if I could masturbate, and she asked a rabbi for me. The rabbi said, if I didn't think about a specific man's face, it was okay. Is this true? No, absolutely not. I don't know what the rabbi was thinking. If a person puts a bag over the head of a man, he can't commit adultery or incest or anything like that. What's the difference between know who the person is? Physical man's body, right, is the arayus, is the gili arayus. So just like we said before, that to think of erotica, a prohibited activity, so then I don't know why the rabbi said that the thinking of a person, the fantasizing, would not be permitted. Even if you don't have a specific man in mind, it's not permitted. One can masturbate on oneself without the involvement of erotica, without the involvement of any fantasizing, right? That is what the halacha says is permitted for a woman to do. I hope I'm not going too fast. Okay, number four. Why is it okay for men to have extramarital relations and not women? (Parentheses) Aside from obvious violations of sneeze. Oh, because I don't understand the question. If the person who wrote extramarital relations means that a man can cheat, right, and can cheat on his wife, I don't understand. Who would say that's permissible? That's not permissible, okay? To have sexual relations out of wedlock, right, even if a woman is not a nida, right, to have sexual relations out of wedlock is an issur d'oraisa. The Torah tells you you have to get married, right? Sexual activity becomes permitted by marriage, not without marriage. Okay, there's a question in the posting, is it the right? Certainly is. Question in the posting whether or not it's a say or a losat say, right? But pointing away the Ramah, Shulchan Aruch Paskins, it's like eating chazer, all right? It may not be misas bezin or kares, but it's still usher. So this if the question was meant extramarital relations, means that's what you mean exactly by that, then I don't understand whoever would say it's permissible. Okay, if the question meant is, why does the Torah allow a man to have more than one wife and a woman to not have two husbands? If that's the question, it's a different question, and the answer to that is that the Torah does not promote two wives. The Torah does not say that a man should have more than one wife. As a matter of fact, see, the Torah frowns upon having more than one wife. The Torah tells us that Dovak B'ishto, a man is supposed to be attached, cleaved to his wife. And we see that in the time of the early, everyone had one, Shei Lemech. It says Lemech had two wives. Okay, and Rashi there expounds why that generation, Dor HaMabul, right, indulged in two wives, and it's not very complimentary, right? Now, the reason why, now we should realize, of course, that today in day and age, of course, a man cannot have two wives anyway because of Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom. So 1,000 years ago, that became impossible by Rabbeinu Gershom's Chayim, and that's universal throughout the Jewish people now. But if we want to know why the Torah would have left that it's possible for a man to have two wives, it's a loophole. It's a loophole in order to allow, the reason for the loophole is the following, which is a famous story which you probably all know. Shmuel HaNavi's mother, Hannah, had no children. Okay, so the real story is like this, is that Elkanah and Hannah were married, right? That was his wife, okay? She could not have children after 10 years. So after 10 years of marriage, no children, so he has an obligation to have children. In today's day and age, that creates a tremendous problem. So what should he do? Divorce her so he can have children? Look, he loves this woman. He's been living with her for 10 years. Now he should throw her out of the house? And it's cruel. It's unthinkable. But what about his own mitzvah? The Torah understood that these types of scenarios can happen and others like that. And therefore, the Torah allowed a loophole that in such scenario, the man can marry a second wife to have his mitzvah puru, but nevertheless, have her remain in the house. The Ikar Habayit, which is what the story of Chana and Penina was, right? If you take a look at now in the Daik of Sukkim and hear right pshat, you'll see Chana was the main wife. And that's why Elkanah emphasized that, do I not love you more than 10 sons? Right? Because that's where the loophole comes in. Otherwise, so that could be that this is a complete aside, and the person who asked the question meant extramarital, which I answered first, but perhaps that she meant, why is he allowed to have two wives? And that would be a brief divergence of why that is true. Okay, next question. What is the Torah view on, quote-unquote, dirty talk in the bedroom between husband and wife? Now, what do you mean by dirty talk? That's the really question. Here are the two possibilities. There's something in Yiddish called prost, which means vulgar. Vulgar talk, right? Now, vulgar talk in the bedroom, so the Shulchan Aruch says that if it's a harvoish to avosa, which means that if it will increase the pleasure level between husband and wife, either one or both, okay? Oh, by the way, it has to be done. When we talk about behaviors between husband and wife in a bedroom, it has to be consensual, which means both parties have to agree. If one party is not in agreement, so the other party cannot force the situation, it has to be discussed. That's counseling. It has to be brought to a counselor, a rav, someone to be able to work out a compromise. Okay, compromise can be worked out to the satisfaction of both parties, but you can't force. Husband can't force wife, and wife can't force husband. Okay, that's not permitted. That's not permitted. That's plain simple menschlichkeit. Okay, but the Torah supports that as well. Okay, now, dirty talk in the bedroom. So if we're talking about prost, vulgar type, so the halacha is that that which will increase the enjoyment level, the pleasure level of the sexual experience, it's permitted. The one is allowed to do that. As we said before, that the ideal marriage is that should not be necessary. Okay, but we don't live in such an ideal world. Okay, so that type of conversation or talk, if it increases the pleasure level, right, and or has a therapeutic value, so then that would be okay. It's okay. Now, what if you're talking about nivel peh? Nivel peh is obscenity. Okay, I don't think I have to say those words, that word. We know what word we're talking about, okay? So leave it said, unsaid. We know what word we're talking about, and other words such, okay? So then it's really only permitted what we call a tzorech refuah. In other words, if it's a release, the person has pent up fantasies, pent up suppressions about sexuality or about the word or how it has been used in his presence, etc. And he needs it, or she needs it, the tzorech refuah, its therapeutic value, then it would be okay to do as well. Okay, but obviously you're seeing that there's a difference between that which you call just prust and vulgar, and that which is actually an obscenity, which is nivul peh. Let's see the next question here. Okay, what is the halacha? What are halachically permissible sex positions? Not what's preferred, but mutar versus asur. Okay, so here we come again to what I said before. It has to be consensual. Right? If it is consensual, then the halacha is that whatever the two of them consent is okay, with one proviso. It's imperative. The hotzah zera, the ejaculation, has to take place within her vagina. Okay, it can't be anywhere else. Okay, so oral sex, okay, which is a question asked, okay, the foreplay of oral sex would be okay if someone wanted to do that, right? But the ejaculation would have to be within her vagina. Okay, likewise, any other position that one assumes, okay, even anal sex, all right? Although if it's consensual, if both parties are in agreement and they want to do it that way, that's okay, but the ejaculation has to be within her vagina. Now, let me just talk about it. We're here to talk about what's not preferred, okay? So there is a concept here of kedusha, right? And that's where all the regularly taught in yonim of how conduct ourselves in the bedroom, husband, wife, all based on a principle of kedusha. Kedusha is a mitzvah, and there's an obligation for all of us to try to aspire to be more kadosh. However, we have to be aware that climbing a ladder requires that we have our firm footing on the ground before we start climbing ladders. So if I try to aspire to levels of kedusha, but because I do that, it wells up within me all sorts of resentment against the Torah and halacha, so those aspirations of kedusha are counterproductive, because the purpose of kedusha is to come closer to Hashem. But if I embark on kedusha activities and therefore become resentful of Hashem's Torah or Hashem himself, so then the chumrah, the aspirations and the chumrah are undermined. They undermine what I'm trying to achieve. We have to keep that in mind. Right? So the same thing as many of these things we're talking about here. You will hear, of course, what was ideally expected or ideally asked for. Those are levels of kedusha, and we shouldn't just negate them. However, we have to realize that in our day and age, in emphasizing or exacting that we want to do the kedusha only can and does boomerang sometimes, and that's why I'm giving here a clear assessment of what the halacha lamaisa is. But my clarification with the halacha lamaisa, the halacha knows the actual bare bones halacha is, should not in any way mean to diminish, or we shouldn't denigrate those who would like, and with honest with integrity, right, to aspire to levels of kedusha. But it has to be done with the advice of someone who understands what is really going on internally in the person. Okay, let's continue. Okay, number five, I think I've addressed that, but let me read it anyway. I would love to hear Das Torah about female masturbation in a slightly more extended manner. Okay, we'll talk more about this also. Now it's forbidden, permitted. Okay, and Torah's opinion of the way to face the subject. Okay, we'll talk more about that also a little bit later with another question, which is more detailed. Number six, hashgacha question. Okay, I was abused without penetration as a child. I did not go for therapy until I was married. I got married more than 30 years ago, and the first night experience was extremely traumatic. My comment, yes, probably was terrible. Okay, back to the question. Baruch Hashem, I'm doing well now. I'm glad to hear that. But one question bothers me. When a woman marries, there is a physical change, breaking of the hymen. In Kabbalah, when we're looking at the mashal of husband, wife, Hashem, Kol Yisrael, what does this aspect refer to? Understanding this would be very helpful to me. Okay, so The answer to the question is, I really don't know, but perhaps, okay, perhaps the following. The Gemara says that Ein Isha Koretzes Bris, Ela Im Isha Osa Keli. The Gemara says that the absolute bond, the cutting of a covenant, the covenant, okay, that a woman makes with a man is only to the man who makes her into a keli, a vessel. The making of a vessel means the breaking of the hymen. Okay, that is what that means. So what Chazal are telling us now, this is what Chazal tell us, whether that's true in today's day and age, where there's so many other factors that go into creating a relationship which formally were non-issues. So that's something beyond the scope of what we're talking about now. But if the Moshul Chazal, that's what Chazal are telling us, that becoming clay kibul, so the Moshul would work like this. Klal Yisrael, right, became the clay kibul of the Torah. Hashem et Mam and Har Sinai made them the recipients of the Torah. No one else could become a recipient of the Torah. That means that the Hashlama, that means the completion of the Bria, right, came about because the Klal Yisrael said yes, because we accepted the Torah, right? That means the fulfillment, the Torah has a place in this world, and it means that Hashem Kaviyochel has a place in this world, all because the Klal Yisrael allowed themselves to become a clay kibul. The marshal then would be also a woman, right, by becoming a clay kibul of the breaking of her hymen, allows her husband, okay, to come to Hashlama, to become a complete entity. That means the two of them now unite and create that Hashlama, that completion, which is a representation of the Hashlama, of the completion that is today's Bria, to the extent that it is. The fact that Hashem, there's a Torah in this world, and that Hashem's presence can be allowed to become the heightened, the awareness of Hashem's presence can be raised and heightened. Okay, like I said, a real answer to your question, I don't have. Perhaps that would be an approach. Okay. Let's go on to the next question. Okay, now, I'm a single girl. That's the question. I'm reading the question. Just a minute. Yeah, okay. I'm a single girl and curious to know if it's permissible to you to have the following thought. Am I permitted, according to Halacha, to think about having sexual relations with my future spouse, even though I am not currently dating, although I am in the parsha of Shidduchim? I often imagine what it would be like to experience sexual intimacy and let my mind wander. Are such kinds of thoughts harmful? Okay, that's the question. Okay, now, the way this young lady describes, there's nothing wrong with what she's doing. Okay, she is, sexual relations with my future spouse. She's not identifying anyone. Okay, the spouse, when they'll have relations, will be okay, there's something here called unrealistic expectations. Okay, and let me explain. I guess I'm going to use two things to have explain this. One is Rav Shlomo Shvadran, the famous Magen Yerushalayim. So he has quips. He has jokes, right? He has little remarks to bring home a point. So this man hasn't shared with any women, but the men's section, this is shared, okay? Shlomo Shvadran used to say that getting married, right, it's not as good as Bachram think, and not as bad as younger life say, all right? This is a good, the Bachram trachten, and this is a left, schlecht, the younger life zogel. What that means, what he meant was the following. Bachram, when they think what married life is going to be, is they think they're going to be the king of the roost and the wife, and it's all going to be great. Okay, and they get married, they realize, you know, there's a second person involved over here, right? And she may have a lot to say about what goes on in the house, and he may not be just exactly anticipation. That's similar what over here. In other words, this young girl, this young lady, she's thinking about what it would be like. Well, there's to the tango, you know, you can have your expectations built up about what married life is going to be like, right? And then the chassan may not be able to deliver what you think you want or have had. And this is certainly an issue with masturbation. Okay, people have told me that masturbating is more enjoyable than having sex with their spouse. That creates a problem because then the masturbation is creating a problem, shalom bayis, right? One of the purposes of the sexual enjoyment, the most powerful enjoyment that humankind has, right, the pleasure, sexual pleasure, its primary purpose, of course, is to beget children. But part of that purpose is that to create a bond, a very strong bond between husband and wife. If I can get that pleasure by self-stimulation more than I can get with my spouse, that's going to create a shalom bayis problem. Okay, now that's the Shalom Shajwan way of putting it. Another way this would be more accessible to you read is Rabbi Shimon Apostorf is a pretty well-known writer. He's written books about Kiruv, which are really spiritual books. There's a lot of spirituality in his book. He probably has studied by 12 steppers. Anyway, so in his Yom Kippur Survival Kit, his Russian Yom Kippur Survival Kit, which is available, in Yom Kippur, he has there that a thought about spirituality as a relationship. Thought about relationships. It's on page 94 of the edition I have. But he talks about the fact that he calls it Hollywood. He's talking about to the secular audience. But Hollywood's incessant teasing of our romantic fantasies, we often develop a mental and emotional image of who will be the right one for me. As a result, we find ourselves relating to what we hoped or imagined someone to be, as opposed to who they actually are. In such an instance, we are hardly relating at all. Rather, we are simply serving our own needs and desires by playing out some predetermined role, thereby ensuring a hollow, lifeless relationship. That's Rabbi Apostorf's quote, then he goes on to speaking about a relationship with Hashem there and how that works also, that there's predetermined, you know. So this idea of, you know, imagining it ahead of time what it would be like with my chassan is fraught with danger only because you're setting yourself up for frustration and for other issues. Okay, next question. Same girl. I'm curious. She claims she's a girl, single girl. Okay, so I'm curious to know if it is permissible to enjoy the figure that Hashem graciously granted me with and try to maintain in the name of beautifying myself for my husband who is not yet my chassan yet. As I mentioned before, I'm not even currently dating a specific boy. I also want to know if it is wrong for me to gaze at my own figure in the mirror. Is this a wrong mindset? Because I do this quite often, and if it's wrong, I would definitely work on stopping these thoughts. Okay, so now, here I would like to refer to Rabbi Dr. Tversky. He should be well and healthy, Rafua Shalema. He has many books, probably close to 100. I've stopped counting after about 50. He has a book called Let Us Make Man. Let Us Make Man is a book about self-esteem and spirituality. If you do decide to read the book, read the second half first. Okay, the first part of the book discusses what poor self-esteem is like. It's a real depressing part of the book. In the middle, where he then shows how using Torah and Torah perspective on creating proper self-esteem, so then he shows how all the poor self-esteem attitudes and behaviors will dissipate, will go away. It's a great book, but start reading the second half first. In it, he has two chapters on the concept of self-esteem, humility, and vanity. Okay, so now I would like to read The Torah, it's about this answer. Answer the question, can I be okay? Can I be proud of that gift which God gave me, right? I have a beautiful body. Am I allowed to enjoy that? Okay? So the Torah, I'm reading Rabbi Tversky now. The Torah is absolute in its condemnation of falsehood, whatever shape or form. Indeed, although many precautionary measures to avoid transgression of biblical edicts are of rabbinic origin, I mean the Rabbanon, only one such precautionary measure is prescribed in the Torah proper, and that is with respect to avoidance of falsehood. Besides the prohibition, you shall not lie, the Torah stresses, midvar sheker tircha, distance yourself from falsehood. So that's a hachok, again, there's a siyog, it's a fence, stay away far from the falsehood. Thus, if the reality is that one has a pleasant voice, then it is improper to deny this. If one is intellectually bright, one must not think of himself as dull. If one is attractive, one may not think of himself as homely. If one is an accomplished scholar, one is not permitted to consider himself an ignoramus. And then he goes on to show how the Chafetz Chaim, in his own persona and his behavior, exemplified this. Because Chafetz Chaim, if anything, was a very big honor. People tell us, and I've met people who knew him, and said, his another was stupendous. On the other hand, he is a very profound posek. He gave hadrachah to people. He passed in silence. He disagreed halachically with great people. He must have been aware of his confidence. Otherwise, how can he do that? So the compatibility of self-awareness with humility is readily understood in light of the Talmudic teaching. If you have learned a great deal of Torah, do not take credit for yourself, but that is how you were created. So just as the person blessed with a fine voice must recognize this to be a divine gift, so the person with a brilliant mind capable of learning, retaining, and analyzing should recognize this as a God-given talent. One can recognize his factual greatness without assuming the pride and vanity of the strutting peacock. And that's the message here. That would be the answer to this question that was just asked. Yes, by all means, you have a beautiful body, God granted. Yes, you should be able to, what was the word you used here? Should you maintain it? Of course you should. Should you groom it? Yes. Beautifying yourself for your husband? Yes, yes, definitely. Not just before you're married, but after you're married as well. Okay? And is it wrong to gaze at your own figure? Well, if it's going to bring to vanity, no. If you want to be appreciative of the gift that God gave to you, then that's fine. But remember to say thank you. So don't just take it for yourself. Thank God for what he has done for you. Next. Now the next question is really, what is considered to be normal amount of physical sexual relations once I will, in Yirat Hashem, be married? Okay, so now I enjoy the sensory feeling of physical touch, like hugs, massages. Are these things stemming from a goyish mentality that seeped into my brain? Is it something that I should try to stay away from? And then do most men generally appreciate physical touch, and how much is allowed and with the normal limits when a woman is starved? So here comes the rule of consensus, all right? What's considered normal amount of relations and touch, okay, depends on what the two consent to, husband and wife. And one week can be one way, and one day can be one way, and the next day something. Each time has to be something that is reassessed. But what they both agree about, that's fine, okay? Now, we have to remember, these are things that are too much of, are not healthy physically. Okay? In other words, someone who indulges in a lot of sex and touch will not sleep well at night. You have to go to a job responsibilities next morning. Okay? These type of things. Now, enjoying the sensory feeling of physical touch, hugs, massages, are these them? No, they're not a grayish mentality. All right? The touch, sexuality is a basic human need. It's recognized. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Deos that sexuality, physical touch, hugs, kisses, these are a basic human need. The Torah doesn't suppress it. The Torah doesn't legislate it out of existence. The Torah says how we should use it, just like eating is a basic human need. But we don't eat shellfish, right? We have to eat kosher. So here also, it's a basic human need, right? All the things you described are perfectly legitimate, okay? The question is how to go about seeking it and doing it the proper way, and also not just the halakhically proper way, but also for the physical, in the physical health. What's good for physical health as well? Now, what about men? Do most men generally appreciate physical touch? Okay, now, I would recommend, there's a book out there called The Five Languages of Love. Some of you have heard of it, may not. Okay, Five Languages of Love, this fellow who did the research and wrote about it, that people, there are five different languages of love, which means that some people like to be touched. Some people like to be given food. Some people prefer getting gifts. Some people like compliments. Okay, there are five different, I forget the fifth category, there are five different categories. And he has a questionnaire over there so each person can figure out what his preferences are. It's a very good thing before marriage or even after marriage to do the questionnaire and read about the five languages of love. Because it could be that your spouse, right, has a different language of love than you do. And whereas you're trying to give him the language of love that means to you, and he, it's okay, it's nice, I'm glad you're doing this for me, but I'd rather have something else. And the other way around, he may be trying to love you in the way that he understands his love, but you don't, that's not your language of love. That's not your main language of love. And this is true about children as well, right? It's not just about nurture, it's about nature, okay? That different children are born different ways. Everybody's different, and it's important to figure out what the language of love is so they should feel loved. Otherwise, I'll be throwing all sorts of stuff at them, and they're not feeling loved. And we wonder why. I do all this for them. Why don't they feel loved? Because I'm just not talking to them in their language of love. Now, this has to do with men as well, right? Almost every man is wired to be sexually active. But that doesn't necessarily mean that that's love. Okay, that's a very surprising thing, right? Once upon a time, when all things being equal, when we were in a shtetl, we'll talk maybe a little bit later about that, is that all things were givens, so then the amount of sex, right, created shalom bayis. Everything else was all the same, okay? And if you had good shalom, if you had good sex, you had good shalom bayis. Whatever else happened made no difference, okay? It isn't that way today, all right? Someone can have a wonderful sexual experience in marriage and still not feel loved, all right? That is the way it is. You can argue whatever you want. I counsel lots of people. That is the way it is, and it's important, okay? And likewise also, if you're getting married and your husband, very likely will be motivated to have sex. But even when he has sex with you, he may not be loving. That doesn't mean he won't act in a loving way. It may not be his real way of expressing love. Okay, it gets complex and sophisticated, but if you read the book and become familiar with the five languages of love, you begin understanding that there's a much bigger, deeper dynamic, more complex dynamic over here than just the actual acts of sex. Next question. This is about female masturbation. I was told that according to halacha, there is nothing wrong with female masturbation. Well, we said that's correct, as long as it doesn't become something that you lean too heavily upon. Emotional, psychological issue, that's not a halachic issue, she writes, but it's a psychological, yes. My question is, though, that as most people, masturbation comes together with fantasy, well, we spoke about it, all right? So now the question is why I want to, is masturbating okay once in a while if it does become an addictive habit, if it becomes hand-in-hand with a fantasy? The answer is no. Can't go hand in hand with fantasy. If it's a problem, what are my next steps? Well, the next steps is to enjoy the pleasure, the sexual stimulation, without the fantasy. One does not have to go hand in hand with the other, right? It is the stimulation using usually the fingers, the hands, stimulation on those points, right? Female sensitive points, right? The stimulation there is what causes the sexual response. It's an autonomic type of response, neuro-psycho-emotional response by just being stimulated there. If one relaxes and one rubs, then you'll get the response, and just remove the fantasizing from the head. The fantasizing would be an isser, but the masturbating itself would be permitted, as he spoke. Okay, so now the original questions we discussed, I think we've answered these here. Can I masturbate occasionally just to relax, relieve the stress of everyday pressures? Is this inherently a problem? The answer is no. Okay, how am I supposed to view masturbation as not used as enough? Okay, so we spoke about this already. It's not always unhealthy. We spoke. Okay. How to serve your female master. We did that already. Right. And I also spoke about a little bit here. She adds this to, why do I feel so ashamed? All right. It's just because of culture, community, social attitude towards the idea. And the answer is yes, that's correct, because of the culture, community, social attitudes. And then there's another thing here as well. So much of what we teach our women, in the Beis Yaakov even, right, is just what we teach the men, just translated over to the women, and therefore there's no differentiation made between that the halacha in question is really being, right, is really made for a man. And this is not her halacha because women do not have to keep the mitzvahs the same way as men do. I'll give you an example, all right? Kriyashma. Of course, the Beis Yaakov teach that a woman must say Kriyashma. Well, in my sefer, I have there a listing of priorities that, for as far as a woman's concerned, Kriyashma is a mitzvah atzei shazman grama. The Kriyashma is a mitzvah that has time requirements. A woman does not have to say Kriyashma. It's a nice thing if she does. There are other parts of tefillah which are more important for her to say because she's obligated there, and on Kriyashma she's not obligated. Okay, well, I'm not going to go into that discussion now, but it's just an example of how, but the Beis Yaakov people teach the girls, right? Of course, you have to take Kriya Shema, and the order of priorities, if you're late and don't have enough time, listed always the same as the men. It's not true. It's just incorrect. Basically, that which we had for the men, we've now transposed and put into the women's arena, which is not, and this would be the case over here about masturbation as well, right? For a man, it's a very, very severe problem because if he masturbates, he ejaculates, and that ejaculation, the Torah says, is a Kai Nisa. Right, the story of Aaron Onan, the story of Tamar, right? They ejaculated outside of her body, and that was something very severe. You see, the Torah prohibits such a thing. So for a man, yes, it's a very, very big issue. He should not be masturbating. A woman, as long as she's not, as long as she's not fantasizing, as we've spoken, so then the masturbating per se itself is not an issue. Let me see. I think there's one more question on this topic, and then we'll open up for questions and answers. And that is, this is a little bit of a variation on a previous question, but has a piece that adds to it. Question reads like this. How is a woman supposed to view her body according to the Torah? The answer to that, all right, based on what Rabbi Tversky wrote. I have a lot of shame regarding my body. Okay, that's probably because of some trauma or brainwashing you received as a child. Next part of the question. And when I tried to start having a more positive body image, that's good, it morphed into a desire to show off my body and curves. What is the role of tefillah? So there's a great book, Sefer, written by a woman, Gila Manelson. The book is called Outside Inside. Okay, it's required reading. Everybody, not just women, men should read it too. It's about what tzniyus is really about. Tzniyus is not a dress code, okay? If someone says tzniyus is a dress code, then they're really, really making a big mistake because I can keep the dress code to the exact rule, exact T, as they say, and not be a tzniyus, okay? Tzniyus is a tzniyus, right? A man or a woman. A man is obviously in tzniyus also. The dress code is different, but the concept of what tzniyus really is the same. Not the men, and that she explains. She explains, doesn't talk about men, she talks about women, but she describes, and basically what she says, it shows tzniyus is really an expression of what we in 12-step program call spirituality, all right? It's a very profound, it's not big, it's a little book, all right? It's Gila Manelson, called Outside Inside, and for what is the role of tzniyus, I think it would be a worthwhile reading for you to get a better handle on what the tzniyus is, and it's not about just the dress code. Okay, so those were the questions on masturbation that were sent in. Rachel, are you still there?
Wow, thank you. That was very clear and organized. Are there any questions before we move on? Does anybody have any questions?